Before you start your next do-it-yourself project, listen to this. You Got This is on the air. You Got This is hosted by ABT Plumbing Electric Heat and Air owner Andrew Twidwell and Rosalie Brown. With a helpful hand, here are Andrew and Rosalie.
Hi, this is Andrew Twidwell, owner of ABT Plumbing Electric Heat and Air. And we're here once again with the show You Got This. It's a show of DIY do's and don'ts. And I'm zooming in with Rosalie Brown down in Dana Point. I'm in a lovely Grass Valley myself. It's actually a pretty cool day out. We were just talking off mic about, you know, some things that are happening in our lives. And I actually have some good news. We're refinancing our house, and the appraisal came back this morning, and it was much higher than we anticipated. So that's exciting. And one of our, I just had a meeting with one of our staff members too, and she's actually in the process of selling her house. But unfortunately, there's nothing on the market in her price point right now. So it's like the housing prices have gone up substantially over the last 6 months or 2 year, even with COVID. But I think kind of because of COVID, everybody wants to move up here now, as opposed to since they can work remotely. So it's raising our housing prices, but at the same time of it raising our housing prices, it's become a seller's market, and there's nothing out there. I know we're talking to a buddy, real estate agent, and he was saying normally there's like 300 some odd houses on the market at this time of year, and the inventory's down around 100 right now. So it's kind of cool. The prices are going up, but yeah, you can't really realize it unless you move out of the area, which I know some people are actually doing, but we're not planning on moving out of the area anytime soon.
Well, let me just say, if anyone's interested in relocating to the Midwest, I have a home that is appreciated in value by a ridiculous amount. And it's still...
Has depreciated?
No, appreciated.
Oh, appreciated, yeah, okay, cool.
You know, and listen, California money goes far in the Midwest. Just, you know that.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
And so just saying, you know, you could have a mortgage of $200 a month and own a really beautiful old Otto Baron estate, just if anyone's, you know, hit me up on Facebook. I've got a great property for you.
Move to Detroit. Or actually, you weren't in Detroit. You're outside of Detroit.
Yeah, I mean, I was three streets away. But the cool thing about where my house is that I still own, is that, you know, people talk about this all the time, and I'm going to get sentimental for a minute because I have a lot of pride in kind of the hustle that happens there. But there's a lot of revitalization going on, and it's not just talk. Like, they really are pouring forward, and some other big companies are investing in not just the downtown area, but which is actually quite expansive. The downtown Detroit and the waterfront of Detroit is actually one of the it's been named like in the top like three or something beautiful places waterfront what that means, but I keep getting these notifications like, look at what happened. But anyway, the point is that there's a area of Detroit that is called Midtown, and Midtown is very attractive because you can get these beautiful Otto Baron homes for next to nothing by California standards, of course. Right. And they have these huge chunks of land, these beautiful architectural homes. Many have been kept up. They're not, you know, dilapidated. And what's happening is, of course, the money's being invested in things downtown, and then it's coming up to Midtown, and there's a huge university there that's actually a great school. And anyway, I won't get you all bored, but there's a lot of really great things happening in that town, and people from California still don't know how cool it is. But
we fell in love with the Midwest. I mean, we actually bought a building in St. Paul. So yeah.
And the people are really cool. I mean, that's one thing I will say. You know, I think maybe some of it is because the weather is so harsh that when you do have the chance to get out and appreciate your neighbor and go and do things, people are really nice, and they look out for each other. And the weather's a little severe.
I don't know. They have the saying in Minnesota, the Minnesota nice. So they're really nice in front of your face, but maybe not so much in inside the living room where they're by themselves.
So in Detroit, in Michigan, what we call that is the we have a name for that, but it's like a Michigan hug. It's like, you know, everybody in Michigan hugs you, and they're all super nice. That doesn't mean they all like you, but but they're just. But I will say that in in the Midwest, it's like there's just a there's just a thing of like trying to be connected, and maybe it's because you could be without power, or you there's a snowstorm, or there's a lot of weather calamities that can happen. Yeah. So maybe people just kind of generally look out for each other. But I do think that that's one thing with COVID. I've noticed that, like in my neighborhood, even we have some, you know, older folks. Or not, some are older than others, but you know, there's some of us. We do kind of a check in regularly, and I think before COVID was going on, we kind of just didn't pay that much attention. There's so many people in California that we get so busy, but I've noticed that people are kind of checking on each other still. And if I get like a
especially
weird
now.
Yeah, if I hear like weird knocking on the door, I used to think like who's here, and now I think, oh God, maybe someone needs help. So who knows? Right. Maybe the pandemic's turning me into a nicer person. I doubt it, but
Stranger things have happened.
It could happen. My black heart could be turning gray. I don't know. We'll see.
It's a bright gray.
I know, right?
The warm gray. It's got a little red in it. Yeah.
You never know.
Go in the right direction.
I know.
So yeah, let's talk about some of the stuff you found this great article on.
Well,
tips and stuff
what I wanted to do was I just thought, and you know me, every time we have a show to do, I'm like, what haven't we talked about? And then, you know, you and I get excited about these little weird projects. We get on these rabbit holes. And then afterwards, I always say to you, I think off mic, like, you know, that's a cool project, but it's really hard to talk about on the radio, right? Because we're not actually doing things and showing it. It's like we're not doing tutorials. So I thought, you know what, why don't we get back to a couple things that I think would be really helpful. So what I think how we'll handle this is I'll ask the question and then you give the response. Because otherwise you talk the whole time. And I got to tell you, man, I love you because I've known you for so long and you're my friend, but that's boring. That's just boring.
It's kind of monotonous. Yeah, so I like that idea. So let's do the Q&A.
So I'm going to ask the plumber. Okay, that's what this show is about. All right? And you keep an eye on the time.
I like it.
You keep an eye on the time, and I'll ask the questions.
I will.
Okay, right, so my first question for the plumber is, should I turn my water off when I go on vacation? Not that there's a lot of vacations possibly happening right now, but let's pretend that everything is normal and people are going on vacation. Should I turn my water off?
Yes.
Why?
So one of the things is, so when the water is on, it's under constant pressure, right? Water pressure, right? So you have anywhere from 40 to 80 pounds per square inch on the entire system. It's not if, but when you're going to get a leak. I'm sorry to say, you know, things are not made to last forever. So things do burst, and, you know, a washing machine hose breaks, water supply breaks underneath the sink, a pipe breaks somewhere in the system, and if you're not there to turn the water off, a lot of water can escape and do a ton of damage. I know one friend who lost a water line, and it took close to a year to get everything fixed because they weren't home at the time, and it destroyed their house. So yes, it's a really good idea. There are some caveats. You know, one of the caveats being, you know, if you've got irrigation, you're going to want to leave the water on. But ideally, like in our home, we've got our water separated from our irrigation. We have valves that we can isolate the irrigation from the house and vice versa. So I can literally turn the water off to my house. Do I do it every time? Probably not, but I do it quite often. You know, and it's one of those things where do as I say, not as I do. But I highly recommend it. And I've seen water damage. I mean, just as managed. So generally speaking, a hose bib, one of the garden valves outside of your house, if you open it full blast, water will be coming out anywhere from about 6 or 7 to 10 gallons per minute. So if you have a water line that breaks inside your house, depending on the size, it can be that or in excess of that. So if you ever drop a gallon of milk on your kitchen floor, you can just imagine 10 of those every minute coming out before the water shut off. And if you're gone, you're talking thousands and thousands and potentially tens of thousands of gallons of water. Some of the issues that can happen, you know, if it's up above, it'll destroy your ceiling. Seen that. I did that when I was an apprentice. I went to lunch and came back, and one of my jobs didn't hold up. Learned a real valuable lesson when I was 18. If it happens on the floor, if you've got any hardwood or laminates or any kind of pergo, it'll completely destroy those. They'll buckle, and you got to replace it all. The other thing is mold. If it sits there for a day or two or longer, you have the potential for more mold spores to start to propagate. All houses have mold. You give it wet environment, they start to just explode. It's like a nuclear reaction. Just one cell after another, it just keeps growing. So yeah, turn the water off.
That's fine.
Definitely.
My goodness. Okay. Well,
definitely. You can save your. And is it going to be something that, you know, does that happen to everybody all the time? No, it rarely happens. But is it a good idea? Yeah, it's a good idea.
Well, so let's talk about then. This ties right into my next question, plumber. Where can I find my main water shutoff valve?
Yeah, that one's huge. If you don't know where your water shutoff is, please, right now, write this down or stop listening and go find it. You need to know where your water shutoff is. Because again, it's not if, but when the water line is going to break. I know people, you know, you can go your whole life without a water line breaking, but eventually that household, there's going to be a water line break of one sort or another. You're going to have a leak. So it's a really good idea to know where that water shutoff is. Typically speaking, you're going to have a valve where the water comes into the house. But since we live in Grass Valley and the surrounding areas, some of it's rural, we don't always have a water shutoff directly in front of our house. If you're on pipe treated water, more than likely you should have a valve at the house that you can turn on. And there's two types of valves that we use. We either use a ball valve, which is basically just a lever. And then we have a gate valve, which there's literally a gate that opens and closes, and there are a threaded dowel, if you will, a threaded rod. So a ball valve with a lever, when the lever is parallel to the pipe, is on. When it's perpendicular to the pipe, it's off. A ball valve, all it is there's a ball inside of there that has a hole in it, and it's the flow of water, or the hole, is the same direction as the handle. So when it's perpendicular, there's no hole going through the pipe, it shuts it off. When it's parallel, it's on. A gate valve, righty-tighty, lefty-loosey.
Those are my favorite. I totally know how to do that.
Righty tighty, lefty loosey. clockwise off, counterclockwise on. If you do have a gate valve, turn it off. Be careful don't really put too much strength into it, because I have seen them fail closed. So, you know, close it, but you know, you don't have to get a wrench out there or anything. Just do it hand tight. Most of the time, we're not putting gate valves in anymore. We haven't put gate valves in our company in 20 years. So, you know, we're seeing fewer and fewer of them, but they still sell them. They're cheaper than ball valves, so people are still installing them, but highly recommend getting rid of them. So yes, find out where your shutoff is. And while you're at it, if you have propane or natural gas, also find out where those are. Knowing where your gas shutoff is really critical. Because again, it's not if, but when there's going to be an issue. Yeah. On a propane system, you've got a valve right at the tank. If you've got a above ground tank, it's really easy to find. Just lift that top. There's going to be, you know, a cylinder, and on top of that cylinder, there's going to be like a long dome. Sometimes it's locked. Usually it's just unlocked. Open that up, and you're going to find a gate valve in there. You can just turn it off there. If you have PG&E natural gas, you're going to need a valve wrench or a crest wrench or a ball or a pipe wrench to close it, because all it is a rectangular piece of metal that sticks out. And again, it's a ball valve, but it's not really, it's same principle. When the piece of metal is parallel to the pipe, it's on. When it's perpendicular, it's off. So know where those things are. Really, really, really highly recommend that you find those things. And if you don't know where those are, just remind us next time we're out there for a service call. We don't do a free inspection to tell you where those are, because it costs us money to get a guy out to the job. But if we're doing something else, by all means, ask us, because we will show you. And we've actually got valve tags. We can tag them and mark it so you will be able to find it in the dark.
Oh, convenient. So, very nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. It's really, 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 really good idea to know where these things are.
Okay. Point made, sir. All right. So, plumber, why is my water cloudy and what do I do to fix it?
So one of the things, cloudy water is again, we're rural, so it could be, there's a lot of things. This article primarily talks about pipe treated water. Let's kind of talk about pipe treated water a little bit. If you do have cloudy water, good chance it's just bubbles. So okay. One thing that you
what
can
does that
do
mean?
Is...
What does bubbles mean? What do you mean?
So bubbles is just literally dissolved air in the water. Mm-hmm. What's water? It's H2O, right? It's hydrogen and oxygen. But it also has actual air in it. So what you can do is if you've got cloudy water and you're concerned about it, fill a glass, put it on your countertop, walk away from it for about 5 or 10 minutes. If you come back and it's clear, it's just bubbles because it'll slowly rise to the top and dissipate.
Okay.
So, and that happens a lot of times when we turn water off and then turn it back on because all the pipes fill up with air. And as the water is rushing through, it's very turbulent and it mixes up just like if you were to, just like a river or something like that, that is turbulent. You get those white bubbles, right? But they can be really, 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 really tiny micro bubbles. So it looks like it's a cloud. It looks like it's particulate. It's just air bubbles. The other time it can happen is if the local utility turns the water off and turns it back on, that could become an issue. The second thing is it could just be dirt. I know some people up here have fairly shallow wells, and you can have turbidity, which is essentially just suspended particulates. Just like, a lot of the rivers right now are running a little brown, because of turbidity, because of dirt.
Yeah.
Same thing can happen in our water system, and that can happen in pipe treated as well. If NID or the local utility works on the water line and recharges it, it'll break away some of the dirt and stuff that's sitting on the bottom of the pipe or attached to the pipe. It'll literally break it away. And then if a plumber or you turn the water off, it'll drain the system down. It'll also do that. It'll mix things up. We have filled, if you're on a well and that's a consistent thing, we recommend putting in a particulate filter. And they're fairly inexpensive. It can be a DIY thing. If you're fairly good with working with PVC, it's usually just PVC, so it's gluing pipes together. You can pick up these filters at any hardware store or plumbing supply shop. I think they run in the neighborhood of, 30 to 60 bucks, somewhere in that range. I can't remember exactly. It's been a while since I've had to buy one. But you put those on, and they're spin-down filters is another name for them. And basically, it's just a sock inside of there, like a nylon sock. And it picks up any dirt and larger particulates. It usually has a threaded fitting on the bottom of it.
Mm.
I've seen a lot of times where people just put a cap on there. I recommend putting a threaded ball valve on there and piping it to the outside if it's not installed outside. And then, the great thing about that is you can leave the water on, turn that valve on, and it will literally push all the debris off of that sock, and that's how you clean it. So if it's just dirt, that's great. And then, the dirt for us usually shows up as orange or red because we have really high iron content in our area. So you'll notice it, you'll see it. Another thing is sulfur. We do have some sulfur in our area. We have what's called sulfur bacteria in some of the wells that we deal with. That's a pretty difficult thing to get rid of. We do have some processes to get rid of it, but that's not really a DIY thing. That's more of a, that's more of getting a water specialist out to determine if that is indeed what you have. We have to send that off to a lab to see if that is indeed sulfur bacteria. But yeah, those are some of the things about having dirty water.
And I just want to say really quick that if you want to get your well water tested, I do believe that Kramer Engineering, or also known as CEI, in Grass Valley, we'll handle that for you. And they've always been really very helpful staff and very in tune with getting your results back quickly. So
yeah, we recommend them all the time.
Yeah, that's just
they're great guys. Jason's a great guy, and the owner over there. You go in there, they'll give you a couple bottles, you take it back, you fill them up in the different parts, they'll tell you where to fill it up and bring it back, and you can have all sorts of tests done, everything from just you know, aesthetic where it's just pH, turbidity, magnesium, hardness, those sort of things. Or, and you can get it all the way up to bacteria and things like that.
Sometimes it's scary.
I had a false positive on one of my tests that kind of freaked me out. It turned out it wasn't an issue, but they had some problems with their equipment. But it was like 20 years or 10 years ago. So, yeah.
So that's
anyway, it looks like we're kind of, we got time for this next one.
Okay, then very next one, number four?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So tell me, plumber, why is water leaking through the ceiling from my light fixture?
See it all the time.
That sounds awful, by the way.
See it all the time. Water follows a path of least resistance. So if there's a hole in the ceiling, i.e. a light fixture that's installed in the drywall, it could puddle up everywhere else. And if that light fixture is just a little bit lower than that puddle, it's going to come out of the light fixture. So typically speaking, it's going to be a leak that's happening up above because water follows the path of least resistance to the ground.
Well, gravity. Gravity.
Yeah.
Gravity.
So it's rare that it's going to be water coming up. So you can kind of, you know, when we go in to try to diagnose leaks and things like that, those are some of the telltale things we're looking for. Is it above our head? Is it below our feet?
Sure.
You know, that kind of narrows it down. What's above that? But I've literally seen leaks coming out of a light fixture from a fixture that was 30, 40 feet away in the house.
Wow. That is crazy.
You know, on old houses, you know, like this house that I'm in, I've got cracks and stuff in the walls. There's been settling. So this house was built in the 30s. It is by no means perfectly level any longer. So that water's going to run downhill until it finds a hole in the ceiling. So, and if that hole happens to be a light fixture, it's just going to come through the light fixture.
You bet.
So it's not coming from the light fixture. It just happens to be a hole through the drywall.
Gotcha. Okay. So I want to propose that you write a book called I've Seen Some Stuff. Because I just think every time we start talking about stuff, you're like, you won't believe what I saw. You won't believe what I saw. And actually, I would.
The weirdest one I ever saw was I had water coming up in the floor in a bathroom through a crack in the linoleum. And it was a live workspace in San Francisco. It was a loft space. So it was a concrete slab. That thing took me, I don't know how many hours to find. I finally found that the pedestal sink had a leak, and inside the pedestal sink, the bottom of it was completely porcelain. There was no notch all the way down to the floor. The pedestal had filled up with water. There was a screw at the bottom of it that was anchored into the concrete, but there was enough space for the water to get past the screw, go in between the concrete and the linoleum, travel underneath the linoleum about 10 feet away, and percolate up through the next seam in the linoleum. And it was a leaky P-trap.
Wow.
It was a simple fix, but it took me forever to find that stupid leak. That one was weird.
See what I mean? I've seen some stuff.
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about. That's what I want you to start working on when we're not together. Okay, so we are coming up on a wrap. So let's go ahead and remind everybody how they can get a hold of your company. What's your company called, and what do you do, and how can they get a hold of you?
ABT Plumbing, Electric, Heat and Air. We do all that. You can find us at easiesabt.com. You can call us at 530-272-9120. You can find these shows on the web, on our website. You can also find us on Facebook, where we share these shows and also a lot of fun little content and stuff.
Little weird stuff, because we're kind of weird
and
like that. But we keep it interesting, because we've seen some stuff.
We have monthly newsletters. Our last newsletter was about indoor air quality, and you can find that. You can sign up for that on our website or call our office and give us your email. We can set you up on our newsletter or give us your address. We also do a printed version. So we have a lot of ways you can find us. And you can find us on YouTube now, and there's a whole bunch of places you can find us.
So.
And with that, I guess our show is done.
That's
so
it.
So thanks
for
listening,
week.
And have a fabulous February, and we'll catch you guys next week. Thanks.
Thanks, Andrew. Thanks, Rosalie. Now let's get that project started. You got this. We'll be back next Friday morning at 9 o'clock on KNCO News Talk 830.